When we were asked to do a demonstration, we were given three moments or movements in the demonstration. The first was that we were invited to present a problem. And the second, that we would look at this problem through some matter or some material. And then third, we would produce out of that exploration a wonder. So what I want to do today, or this evening, I suppose, it's today for me. What I want to do this evening is examine the creation and the formation and the governance of existence and existence under the pressure of two concepts, the Anthropocene and the Meteorocene. Why not say Meteorocene? Climate change, right? So understanding a planetary existence through climate and understanding a planetary existence through deep time or geological time. Now, I think it's important that we remember that these are concepts, and in some ways, it doesn't matter what finally the geological society decides about whether or not we're in the Anthropocene from a geological perspective, because the concept is already in the world and doing work, and that's one of the things I want to look at today. So, my problem, as per instruction, It's simple. How are two divisions within existence, that is, how are two fundamental concepts within the concept of existence, shuddering, shaking, violently liquefying under these two concepts, the Anthropocene and the Meteorocene? And when I end, what kind of new political figures are emerging and what new strategies and discourses are emerging under, I think, the pressure of both climate change as a concept, or the Meteorocene as a concept, and the Anthropocene as a concept. The two divisions that I'm interested in today really focus on one in particular. That is the division between life and non-life. That is, not the division between life and death, which is really what we think is happening from the Anthropocene, that is, extinction from the Meteorocene, climate change. We think, oh, the pressure's really on life and death, vis-a-vis this notion of extinction. But what I want to start with is the more fundamental division, that is, the division between life and non-life, the concepts of life and non-life. And the reason I want to do that is that life and death, these two poles that we fetishize, are themselves simply a subdivision of that first division. You can't have life and death unless first we say there is life and there's something that defines life that's other than non-life. And it's only when we have that division we then have life and death, and then we have other divisions such as the human animal, the non-human animal, plants, and et cetera. So what I want to do today is simply explore this division between life and non-life in order to perhaps get to life and death. The matter of my little theater today is somewhat simple. A turtle. Now what is this flame doing here, I wonder? A turtle. Some rocks, and not those lily pads, but another lily pad. And I want to start by asking a really simple question. How many existents are in this, if we take this as existence, like let's take it as Gaia, how many are actually in here, right? Are there one? Are there two? Are there three? Are there none? Is there an infinity of existences in here? Right? So, you know, there's rocks. Is that one? There's plants of various sorts. Are there various sorts of plants? But let's say two. Where'd my little guy go? Here he is. Right? Hi. Right? Are there three? Hello. He was trying to bite me this morning. Are there four because of water? If I really look in here, are there these microbes and bacteria? 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, right? How many existence are in this existence? Now they gave me a towel, because we can't talk about the Anthropocene and extinction and get dirty at the same time. We have to be very clean. Okay. I can also not harm it. Well, but that's what we're gonna see, can't we? I wonder what this flame is doing here. Is this working? Oh, come on. Oh, yes, good. Okay, good. Now, also, what does it matter if I have this cellophane? And I decide, I don't know if I can do it, but I decide to, the owner of this turtle is in the audience. If I decide to wrap my existence, and we just, it's not very good wrapping. But anyways, if I wrap my existence, my little Gaia, for a while, and how long will these things that I've just identified actually continue to be in their state if I keep it like that? Okay. Now, of course, how we answer this question, are there one, or the two, or the three, or there infinity, or there none, really depends on a very simple thing, again, is how do we define the difference between life and non-life? What are our kind of common sense notions, and how are these changing in terms of various conceptual fields? Right. Now, where's my little clicker? Here's my clicker. We could say, let's be Deleuze and say there are three divisions, right? There's philo-critical practices, whose purpose is to develop concepts. There's the natural sciences, whose business is to quantify, and that's what we're doing. Geological, like the problem with geology and Anthropocene, how do you quantify it, right? And then there are aesthetics or arts, which are about intensifying our feelings, such as these demonstrations today. So how do they define the division between life and non-life? And how is this notion of the Anthropocene and the Metercene putting pressure on that? So let's start with the natural sciences. And don't throw tomatoes at me if I get this wrong. Okay, so in the natural sciences, one of the first things we have to understand when we're thinking about the division between life and non-life is that the division is based on what we could call an epidermal imaginary. That is, the membrane as that which allows life to emerge as such, right? And this little video here is simply, these are lipids, and the top of the lipid is hydrophilic, and the bottom is hydrophobic. And one of the insights in the evolutionary biology of cells, according to my sister, who is a cell biologist, of course, is that this is how we get the creation of cells. That is, the little hydrophobic tails move away from water molecules, the hydrophilic heads move toward them, and they establish a membrane. So, one of the things we can say is that you cannot have a cell, which is the smallest unit of life from a biological point of view, unless you have this membrane. Right? That's what technically distinguishes life from non-life, and the advent of life on this earth. Now, these are very technical means there, and the science is amazing how they, you know, actually show this. But this epidermal imaginary, this epidermal reason, is really important because it's what gives us life and thus gives us death. Life is only born when you can enclose yourself. Something can enclose itself. It can have self-referential, self-intentional action, right? Grow, reproduce, and die. That, from a biological point of view, is what defines life. Such that even in terms of cells, and there's always an ethics, once you get to life and once you get to this ability to self-define, have self-intention, grow, and thus thus necessarily look on the horizon as suffering death, you build in a certain kind of ethics. So even biologists, cell biologists, have an ethics of cell death. That is, healthy, normal death, because even cells have normal death, or it's called apoptosis, that's right. And of course we know that an untidy cell death is called necrosis. So you already have an ethics built into this. Now, of course, it also, from a biological point of view, influences what we think a membrane is, right? So is this a membrane that has any importance in terms of biological life? No, right? Does this membrane have these rocks, do they have a membrane? And is it of the sort that can be, the sort that can have this kind of mysterious, self-intentional action? Well, for a long time, the answer was no. That's how we divided life. We divided life by simply saying, at the beginning were these membranes. They gave shape and integrity. And gave us the reason and the difference. But of course, what the Anthropocene is doing now, in relation to the Meteorocene, is two things. The Anthropocene, in asking what is the golden spike, where do we put the spike down for man's influence or human influence on the environment, has started us thinking, wait a minute, what's the golden spike for where we put the location of the emergence of life, right? And how do we seal the boundaries between life and non-life? And under the pressure, but it, of course it's coming from other ways, there's an emergence of this new kind of science called geobiochemistry. That is, the idea that these processes of life and non-life can't actually be disentangled. And we see this, though, primarily through climate change. And what climate change has done is, by doing the whole Earth as our catalog, it's shown us that non-life substances are internal to the very nature of life. That is, rocks, soil, water, that which doesn't have the mysterious ability to enclose itself, nevertheless, is internal to the processes of life from a planetary perspective. And so the very shaking of the division in the biological and geological sciences, that is the allocation of knowledge, epistemological knowledge. Geologists, you take care of non-life, we biologists will take care of life. You geochemists take care of non-life, we biochemists will take care of life, is itself beginning to be undone under the pressure of these. So, what about, did I just kill this? Yeah, no, good. What about philosophical concepts? And right now, I should say, in the natural sciences, there's not really a good way out of this division right now. What about the philosophical sciences or critical philosophy? Well, let's just take a really quick stroll down the avenue, right? We can start with Aristotle. How did he, how did he distinguish between life and non-life? Well, the first thing he did is he said, look, there are things, right? There are things, and things are that which have a kind of this-here-ness. So if I went over here into my little Gaia planet, I would say, hi, I'd say this rock is a thing. That's good to know, right? And it's a thing because there's a certain kind of this-here-ness to it. This plant is a kind of thing because there's a certain kind of this-here-ness to it. Like I extend my hand and I hit it. Now, water, too, has a kind of this-here-ness to it, and we have to understand the property. So does this, did he sneak out of here? Oh, no, he didn't. Hello. And this, too, has a this-here kind of quality, and so do I. I have a this-here kind of quality, right? So what's the difference between life and non-life if we all have a this, here, this kind of quality, right? Well, and you could also have the various four forms of cause for Aristotle and all this here kinds of things. And so Aristotle said, well, there's a division between this kind of this here-ness, this, like this, these kind of rocks or that bigger rock, that plant, and this turtle and I, because you're very shy, because this turtle and I have something that other kinds of things don't have, that is, we have potential. I wonder what I'm gonna do with this fire flame here, right? So for him, some things, such as rocks, came into existence fully actualized. They're just pure actualization. That rock is not going anywhere from its own intentionality. We are really special, so we can make it have potential it doesn't have, but from itself, from the thing itself, it doesn't have potential. It's just pure actuality. I go over here, and other than wind, nothing's gonna change that rock, Aristotle. Ah, but living things are both actual, but also they have potential. They come into the world with a final cause, a telos, right? And the drama of life is the drama of whether you're going to potentialize your actual being before you kaput and die, right? You gotta die. Or whether you're just gonna sometimes actualize it, sometimes actualize it and sometimes not. So he had two kinds of potentialization, two kinds of actualization, one kind of potentiation, just in case someone says, I don't know my Aristotle. Okay, so yes, and that's been this major distinction that really sits under the geological and biological sciences. Critical philosophy, we could say, has moved on. For instance, Agamben very famously said, oh, Aristotle was wrong. We can actually make another division, not just between things that don't have life and things that do, but kinds of things with life, i.e. what's special about humans is that we can have the potential to be something, actualize that potential, and then choose not to do it. So we have what he called generic and negative potentiality. Wahoo, that's great. So now we're neither just these rocks, nor are we simply living things, but now we have this extra kind of potentiality to not give a damn about climate change and just do fucking nothing. Okay, where am I? That's philosophy. Oh, no, there's another way in which I think, especially in critical theory around the Anthropocene, another critical theorist who has been really important, and a concept that's been important has been mobilized, that is the concept of the assemblage, right? Yes, I heard somebody, yes, the assemblage, that'll get us out of this mess. Because what we know about the assemblage coming out from Deleuze and Deleuze's engagement with Spinoza is that here in my beautiful world, there aren't just individual existence that the purpose of knowledge is to distinguish and classify, but this whole thing is an assemblage. That is, each of its parts is internal to the other. Doesn't that sound like climate change? Right? Climate change is when we realize, oh my God, it's not live and dead and human animals and non-human animals and plants. No, we're all part of a system, right? And that system has a certain kind of vitalism, and that's what's going on. Okay. So we're out of it now. We know that everything in here is connected and it's all equal. You kill one, you kill everything. You save one, you save everything. Where are my glasses? Okay. I think we also know from moving out of this idea of assemblage that seems so much like climate change and what we need now, that we really all want to know, how do we allow animals to vote? How do we allow the rocks to speak? Because they have something important to say, right? They're part of our assemblage as well. Okay. since this Matter Theater is really about us thinking in practice, it's beautiful, isn't it? All right, so we know all these things. We know the distinction between life and non-life is really one that we should really be suspicious of. Non-life is internal. You can go back to cell biology. I could have gone into a long thing about cell biology and shown that the distinction's really meaningless. Just in case you're worried. And we know that we're an assemblage now, so everything's internal to everything else. We know that. So what can art help us do? You know, on the one hand, we say, oh, well, no, what art does is it helps develop reflexes for entering into this new system we're gonna have to be in, to help us understand that we're all in an assemblage and everything's inside and outside itself. But you know what art can also do? Ooh, my cell phone. Art can also show us that no matter what we think we know, and no matter how, you know, hey, I know it's all an assemblage. In fact, our bodies are geared in such a way that we can't act that way, right? Or to think we can act that way is fine. Till I asked you, can I throw these pebbles in there? Yeah. Anybody screaming? Why aren't you screaming? Okay, fine. These leaves, they're dead. Huh? I am going for the turtle. I'm going straight for the turtle. How much you guys care if I throw a living plant in here? Really? Seriously, are you just saying because you love me? We're talking about the Anthropocene, in which things are going to die, and the question is how, where, who, in what form? Something to know, right? I actually eat turtles. I know, that's so wrong, right? But my friends in Australia and I, we eat turtles because it's cheap, easy food. Okay, I know. No, shh. Because, Give it up for this turtle, yes! You saved your life, here. Point being made, and I don't think it's just the turtle. How many of you guys would give up your clothes, right? How many of us would really say, no, look, woo, give up something? How is it that we're not talking about, as we talk about the distinction between life and non-life, mass extinction, we're actually not talking about differential death? And I don't mean the South is losing and the poor are losing. Yes, absolutely. But I'm saying that we have to lose. Now, in conclusion, in some ways, again, I don't think it really matters what we think, because now all around us are new political figures, new discourses and new strategies that are actually refusing the difference, or they're approaching the difference between life and non-life in new ways. They're all three different strategies that say, in this moment, we have three ways we can do this. On the one hand is the desert, and the desert is a strategy that approaches the question of life and non-life and says, things once had life and then they're denuded of it. Right? But that thing denuded still exists. Mars exists, right? So why are we fetishizing life? On the other hand, the desert is that which says where once was life is not now life, and we have the technical means to solve it. That is, there's not a built-in politics. Second figure, the animist. Again, not a built-in politics. On the one hand, the animist, we raise up the animist and we say, ah, the animist is that which person, figure, that refuses the distinction between life and non-life because the animist knows everything is life. Right? So we ask the animist, the recycling subject, indigenous worlds, to bear this knowledge why nothing changes. And the third, of course, has disappeared. It's the virus. And the virus's approach to this division between life and non-life, on which all our epistemologies depend, and says it is a difference that makes no difference whatsoever, and it's the difference that in the end is going to decide life forever. Thank you.